This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, it was a good morning until I just lost my stupid phone, okay?
I saw you fussing
over
there.
I had all this scripted, Laurie. I was going to go, what a beautiful morning it is. And boy, we're going to have a great day. Well, forget all of that, I'll tell you. We're not going to forget about it. I will overcome why my phone dies at the wrong time, okay? So at any rate, folks, tomorrow is the big day.
Tomorrow is the big day, election day.
This could be the day where the Constitution of the Republic writes itself or continues down this path of absolute destruction, okay? So I want to talk a little bit about that, but I also have three really great guests coming on. One is Pete Rehm, who is running for Senate District 33. That's that newly created, gerrymandered district that now has Vivian Figures as the Senate representative for Spanish Fort. How in the world they did this is beyond understanding, but nevertheless, they've done it. Pete is going to be on to talk to us a little bit how his campaign is going. Our expectation is that he's not only going to do well, he's going to pull this off, and he'll tell you why in just a little while. Our second guest is going to be, I've had him on before, the Libertarian gubernatorial candidate, Jimmy Blake, Dr. Jimmy Blake. Now, I've heard this, and, well, let me say this, and then our third guest will be Dr. John Sophocles, who is also running for the U.S. Senate on the Libertarian ticket. I want to just note this. There are issues with the Libertarian philosophy that we heard on Saturday morning at the think tank. People are worried about where the Libertarians stand on different issues. And I agree with that. There are issues with that. But I will say this. Both Dr. Blake and Dr. Sophocles do not, in my mind, fit into that Libertarian mold that we should be concerned about. These are folks that, John Sophocles and I have known each other for a long, long time. He is not a druggie, okay? He's not an open border guy. So whatever kinds of problems we have with libertarians in general, I know John Sophocles well enough to know he doesn't fit that. I also know that Dr. Jimmy Blake doesn't fit there because some of the people who are supporting him have known him for 25 years when he was a councilman, a reformed councilman in Birmingham. And some of those people I've known for just as long as I've known John Sophocles. So I'm willing to take a bet that both Blake and Sophocles are worth looking at, because guess what? You're looking at Kay Ivey. Who is going to vote for her down here? That's, Miss $6 toll, Miss gas tax, Miss take away your right to vote for the, your State Board of Education member. That's what she did. Now, how in the world she got through the primary? The smart people will tell you there were too many people in the field. Maybe so, okay? It doesn't matter how she got through it. We have a choice. And that choice is to vote for Jimmy Blake, because he actually has done some good things as a councilman in Birmingham. It's a whole lot better than what I can say about Ivy, just on the basis of what I just said about her track record as far as this area is concerned. So then we get back to, our wonderful candidate, first U.S. Senate, Shelby's clone, Katie Britt. Do you really think that there is a chance that she would be anything like a Mo Brooks in the Senate and stand up for Alabama's rights? Or she's just going to be a go-along to get along and do what Shelby tells her to do and what Mitch McConnell wants? I mean, McConnell spent $15 million getting her elected. So it's not as though she's an independent candidate ready to go to Washington like Mr. Smith and fight the swamp up there. No. No, no. Okay? So there are the choices. Okay? And my argument here is that we need to give those folks a chance. So as we think about those candidates that I'm going to have on, I want to just kind of take a minute to frame this election in terms which I think are fairly stark, okay? Now, we can argue that, you know, Biden is so bad that, you know, his days are numbered and all like that, and you know, maybe that's true. I mean, you know, he may not last the next 2 years. But then you've got Kamala Harris. And if we don't get rid of the House being controlled by the GOP, I mean the Democrats, and the Senate controlled by the Democrats, then what's in store for us? It doesn't matter whether it's Biden or Harris. You're going to get the same woke, BLM, Antifa, Marxist movement going down this road to, quote, Obama, fundamentally change America. Now, think about how they're framing this election. This election is, in their view, and in the view of those who support them, I mean, listen to some of the rhetoric that's come out of this, okay? And, I mean, I don't know if you all heard a historian, Michael Beschloss. He was on TV at MSNBC, I guess it was, and basically made this point that if the MAGA Republicans win, then what's going to happen is your children are liable to be killed. Yeah, Lori just jumped on that one. Yeah, I mean, this guy is a historian, a presidential historian, and he's got that kind of interpretation of what MAGA extremists are all about? You've got to be kidding me, okay? And then, of course, you've got Obama and Biden and Hillary Clinton. This is a threat to democracy. I mean, you know, it's interesting, and some of these pundits have pointed this out, and it's quite true. The Democrats say all these things about the threat to democracy when the only real threat to democracy is them and what they're doing to undermine small-d democracy. Okay? But be that as it may, here you have this rhetoric that essentially is setting the stage for something to happen. And you say, what do you mean? Well, I mean, think about this. If what Biden has said and what Obama's saying and what Hillary is saying is such a threat to American democracy, then isn't it reasonable to assume that they would be, you know, able to and should take whatever steps are necessary to prevent these terrible outcomes from happening? Okay? And if that's the case, what would they be doing? Well, wouldn't they be making sure that their political enemies are going to be suppressed? And aren't they already doing that with the Department of Justice and the FBI, weaponizing and politicizing justice? Of course they are. So they've already laid the predicate for what they want to do to shut down political opposition. Get it? It's that simple. They don't think that we should have a voice in what's going on. And if that's the case, then the argument becomes, what happens if, in their view, the dire, you know, circumstances arise that they've lost the House and the Senate, and then what? Well, run the reel back just a couple of years in 2020, the summer of, and what did you get? The summer of rage. Now, if you think that the George Floyd killing, which was something that shouldn't have happened, then if you think that they would not use this, the direst consequences of this election failure on their part, they lose the House and the Senate, it's all over, because Biden is not going to be able to push through the rest of his program. He just said this the other day, we're going to shut down the oil fields. I mean, he's been talking about shutting down the coal miners. And, of course, they have to walk all that back. We didn't interpret his words correctly when he said he's going to shut down the coal fields. Really? I mean, how do you misinterpret that, what this idiot said? But be that as it may, you've got this situation where they have already set the predicate for what happens next. And that what happens next is going to be a major problem in terms of what is what they will do to retain power. Okay? We've already seen the Summer of Rage, and if you think the Summer of Rage was bad, just wait until you see what they unleash on everyone when they lose the House and the Senate. That's what you're facing with here. Okay? So, I mean, you know, when I say that's what you're facing, actually, we aren't facing that here. Okay? Alabama is not that way. Okay? But places where you've got Democratic governors and Democratic mayors, we've seen this script before, and it's already pre-written. George Soros money doing whatever they're going to need is going to be part of this equation. Okay? Staging BRICS, staging whatever else they need to disrupt, you know, Molotov cocktails, all of it. That's what you're looking at. And so the argument basically from this perspective is that, yes, we have got to take control, and yes, we better be prepared for what's coming after, because they will, in fact, be going after all of us. So that's the reality of it. Okay. Now, I've kind of gone on a long rant, and I'm sorry that I've just eaten into Pete Reams, a little bit of Pete's time. So let me just get Pete on the line. Pete Ream, is that you on the line?
We have him on the line.
We do. Laurie says he's on the line. Pete, can you speak?
Yes. Sorry.
All right.
I was in another interview and ran over.
Oh, that's okay. Well, that's all right, because I was running over, so I gave you a few extra minutes, all right? So, Pete, I mentioned to everyone that, you know, you're running in this newly created District 33 that includes Spanish Fort and parts of Mobile. And I think that, you know, just to refresh everyone's minds, just give us a quick rundown on how you see this race shaping up, and then we can talk a little bit more about some of the issues that you're concerned with.
Well, I think the race, it's going to be close because it's a new district, and they've added, you know, about 20,000 something new people, which amounts to almost 12,000 to 15,000 new voters. So that dynamic will be different, but it's still a 60% minority district. So it's a tough climb for a Republican. But if you go in your campaign, if you go and compete in the neighborhoods, you'll find that there's an audience. They're thirsting to have their voices heard. They feel neglected. So if you'll actually go into the community and meet the people and listen to the people and understand what their needs, they're extremely receptive, and we've had a very positive a reception across the community from 8 Mile to Spanish Fort, from Pritchard down to DIP, every community. So I think while it's going to be close, I think we're going to prevail.
Well, let me ask you about, you know, Pritchard. I know that you've said before that you've had a welcome there. Can you give us a couple of examples of the welcoming and some of the issues that they have, aside from the fact that Figures hasn't really talked to them or is concerned about them?
Well, I mean, we found that she sort of opened the door because the people are disappointed and frustrated. She's not accessible. She doesn't go in the community. They never hear from her. And now for over 10 years, nobody can point to anything she's done. They look around their communities and go, what has she done? What has anybody done? Things are not improving. And there's so many issues from education to infrastructure and mental health care reform that people are going, why are we not talking about these things? Why do we not hear from them? So we've had that warm reception. We had a fish fry for 100 people in Pritchard, downtown Pritchard, on Friday. We've had multiple events in Pritchard.
That's great.
We walked neighborhoods in every part of the district over the last few months. We've met people everywhere, and the reception, no matter where we are, has always been warm and cordial, and the people are open-minded. So I think we'll see tomorrow, but I just feel like we are going to get a larger share of the minority vote than any Republican has ever gotten before. But that's because it's not about being right. It's not about being a Republican. It's about representation. It's about getting results, and that's what we talk about when we're out there, not flipping a seat, about hearing from the people.
Well, I think that's encouraging that you've had that kind of reception, Pete. And I think that, you know, issues pertaining to, you know, what we've always been concerned about in terms of, you know, the lack of getting rid of Common Core. I mean, has that come up in your discussions with people who are out there, or just exactly what is the feedback you're getting as you go throughout these neighborhoods?
Well, education in particular, the feedback is we need to do something different. People look and go, wait, we keep hearing the same thing. Oh, you got to do more for the public schools. Oh, you're fighting Common Core, but we can't get Common Core out. I mean, we're in this new loop of the establishment. Both Democrats and Republicans are just trying to preserve the status quo with public education, and there are some bright spots in public education, but they're not across the board, right? And so the people, they just want to change, and they don't want to fight with the public education. Let's work with them to get better. But if they can't or they're too slow, the children don't have time. So give the parents a choice. Give them a voucher. So if their school is failing, they can go to another school. They can find an option. And I think that competition will make all the schools improve. And it also gives the parents a greater opportunity to get engaged. We complain about that. But sometimes they're not engaged because they have no opportunity.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about not having an opportunity. Because it's really a closed system. They don't really... This school board here in Baldwin County has been resistant to any kind of, you know, public outcry about various issues. So I don't need to get into all of that, but the fact of the matter is that that's exactly one of their biggest problems. But let's just assume for a second that you know, we can move in the right direction of getting rid of Common Core. Then perhaps the public education would start improving, but that still doesn't mean that people shouldn't have the right to take their kids to another school with vouchers. And I think that's an important point that you're making about that I think should be, you know, very well received. I mean, I think if you remember several years ago, a pastor up in Pritchard had opened a little Christian school. And one of the things that he couldn't deal with, though, was that the people who were fleeing public education could not afford the tuition. Whereas if they do what you're suggesting, I think that was Pastor Cunningham and Pritchard. Basically, that would be an alternative where you could get a good, solid Christian education and be happy with what your kids are doing. I mean, I think it is such a no-brainer that you'd think that we could get that through, but that's something that, you know, I think that you've got to be, you know, willing to really fight the establishment on that if you know, when you get up there, Pete.
Right. The people just want results. They want you to try something different, and we haven't been trying anything different. And let's try different things and see which works.
All right, so...
And I'm sure public education can be improved.
Yeah, I mean,
parochial schools, give them a chance.
Well, I completely agree with that. We can't just let public education go down the tube, although they don't deserve a lot of our support. We can't allow, you know, the bulk of the people who want to or can't do anything else but go to publication, just leave them on the vine to be told all this woke stuff and all the rest of that. But let me just shift to another issue. What is your sense about the bridge issue when you're talking to folks there on both sides? I mean, you've got, you know, constituents on both sides of the bay. What are your thoughts there, and what do they want you to do when you get to Montgomery?
Well, I think everybody has sort of accepted or come to accept that we need a bridge, because the traffic, it's not just the beach-going traffic, is really bad, but as our port continues to grow by double digits, so is the truck traffic on I-10. And over the next 5 to 10 years, the truck traffic is going to become an even bigger problem. It may rival the beachgoers, because there's going to be a lot of trucks as this port expands by double digits. So I think everybody's resigned that we've got to have a bridge. So I think then the first thing people want, they want to make sure that we're getting a fair shake in Montgomery, because it puts a burr under everybody's saddle that, you know, if you're in Birmingham or Huntsville or Montgomery and you need a loop or a bypass that costs $1 billion, somehow they can find the money to pay for that and there's no toll. So I think people want to know that we've gone through all of the avenues to get as much support from the state, from the state tax dollars, and apparently there's federal grants that are complicated but are available, and get as much money before we have to get down to a toll. And if we do have a toll, it better be pretty darn reasonable and not penalize the local folks. You know, like that stupid plan that was going to be $6 and they were going to toll everything. All the tunnels, I mean, the local people would have no, I mean, that.
Yeah, no free route.
It still boggles my mind that somebody put that moronic pole out.
Well, you know, I don't want to belabor the bridge issue, but at the think tank the other day, we talked a little bit about this in terms of the financing of it. It's a House of Cards financial plan. So our argument has been ALDOT should have a backup plan. If they can't do both of their projects, which includes the new bridge as well as concurrently doing a new bayway, I mean, it's $2.6 billion. So the point, in my view, for you as the new senator from up there, would be to go to ALDOT and push them to look at an alternative that makes sense. And that's an expressway that both Senator Al Britton had proposed and Kevin Spriggs had proposed, under $1 billion. Okay? And you've got a long enough time with the Bayway, the lifespan is at least 15 years. So you could do that. If finances are a problem, then just cut your losses on both big projects that you can't afford to do something. So I guess, Pete, that's one of the arguments that I would, urge you to think carefully about when you're up there.
And I think we need to look at all that, because the biggest thing is it has two big things. One, it needs to happen much sooner rather than later. And two, it needs to be fair and equitable to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Pete, we're about running out of time here, so you want to just give us a final wrap-up as to why everyone should go and vote for Pete Rehm tomorrow?
Look, South Alabama is a wonderful place, and we are blessed in so many ways between our resources, our people, and a lot of the economic opportunities we've had. But they will not continue without some work done in Montgomery. There's cases where we need Montgomery to do things, and there's cases where we need the state to stay out of the way. And what we need is leadership, aggressive, dynamic advocacy for South Alabama, a champion for South Alabama, a champion for the port that will work with the rest of the state to make sure that South Alabama is fairly represented across the board, and that we get our share, since we provide, over 35% of the state revenues come from Mobile and Baldwin County. We need to be maintained down here so we can continue that prosperity to feed the state. And we need leadership in Montgomery, somebody who will go up there and really advocate and represent the people. So, look, get out and vote tomorrow. I'm humbly asking for your votes. I particularly appeal to your Spanish Fort folks. If they turn out like they really want representation, they can totally affect. There's enough votes in Spanish Fort that they can affect the outcome of this election themselves, And that's if everybody in Spanish Fort who's registered comes out and votes.
Okay. Pete, thank you so much. I'll probably see you tonight at some point. Take care, guy. Bless
yes.
you. Bye.
All right. Thank y'all.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
All right. All right, folks. There was, you know, Pete Rehm running for District 33 Senate race. As you've heard, we need to get people out. So, you know, people who are from Spanish Fort and people who are listening here who are, don't live in Spanish Fort, call your friends in Spanish Fort. Make sure they know that there's, you know, a race happening, that they have got to get out and vote for Pete Rehm in order to make sure that we've got someone who will fight for Baldwin County and Mobile County in Montgomery. And he's the person to do it, okay? So I think that we now have Dr. Jimmy Blake on the line. Jimmy, you there?
Morning, Lou. How are you?
Hey, how's everything going?
Well, good. We're trying to wrap it up. You know, I want to thank John Wall, the chairman of the Republican, trying to help us so much. He keeps attacking us, and I can't think of anything I like better.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's always going to be those kinds of things. Like I did with Pete, what I want to try to do is just give you a quick, you know, opening to give us a sense of what is going on with your campaign, and then we can talk about some of the issues that have come up since the last time you were on the show, okay?
Well, so, you know, we've got a great campaign, Lou, and as you know, we've been all over the state campaigning. You know, we don't have a lot of money, but I think we've done a reasonably good job of getting our message out. If anybody really wants to see, if they went to rumble.com and searched for Vote Jimmy Blake for Alabama Governor, we've got like 30 videos that are, I think, very good and I hope effective up there, and I'd love for people to go look at them. You know, again, my big focus in this election is making sure that the people of Alabama have some options on the ballot in the future, and the best way to do that is to make sure the Libertarians get 20% of the vote in the governor's race in one of our statewide offices. So I want to encourage people to not only vote for me, but for Ruth Nelson, who doesn't have a Democratic opponent, is running for Lieutenant Governor. Laura Lane, who's running for Public Service Commission, does not have a Democratic opponent, and there are a number of other people, for State Auditor, for State Treasurer,
right,
that people can vote for that don't have Democratic opponents. And any one of those that gets 20% of the vote in the governor's race would assure that people of Alabama have an option. The best thing the Libertarians have done this time around, John, Lou, is that we've sensitized the Republican supermajority. I think they realize now they better start looking at tax reform, regulatory reform, because we're letting people know that Alabama's got one of the worst business climates in the country. We've got one of the most oppressive tax structures in the country. We've got one of the worst school systems in the country, and all of this on the watch of the Republican supermajority and Republicans controlling every statewide office. I also think that people are catching on to the fact that this horrendous situation we have with the prisons is not really being addressed, but that the governor is simply using COVID money to, best I can tell, just reward the people who contributed so many millions of dollars to her campaign.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, you've hit the nail on the head in terms of, you know, holding this Republican majority to account, particularly on the education issue. So let's just talk about education real quick. Let's assume that it's day one. What would be your day one approach to dealing with the education problems that we have seen for the last 12 years?
First thing I do is let the people know the federal government and their Common Core program is running the educational system, and that the governor has been very dishonest about what's really going on. They changed the name. The substance of it is the same, and it's really about teaching children to to be good subjects of government rather than being thinking citizens who know how to deal with the issues of government. If we don't deal with that issue, we're going to lose our constitutional republic, Lou.
Well, I think that you're absolutely correct about that, and I think that the saddest thing that we've seen is that this governor has not taken the steps that were given to her. Our team put together a repeal Common Core resolution. We had it there for Michael Sentence when he was the superintendent, and then they got rid of him because he was a threat to Common Core. And the next thing you know, you've got the same people doing the same thing, and and here again, I'm not a score guy, but on the other hand, in 2019, when we hit 52nd in math and 48th in English language arts, that should have been a signal that something's wrong. But they don't want to change, and that is the whole problem with it. You've got educrats up there who basically have bought into Obama's fundamentally changing America, and that's what they're doing. They've injected woke doctrine into it. They've got sex education. They're doing all of this stuff. And here again, you've got this drag queen issue up in Huntsville, okay? And that drag queen, did his show, and he's still a teacher in the middle school, eighth grade, up there in Huntsville. This is an outrage, and I think that, it's one of those things that you can't just, talk about. You have to act on it, Jim. And I think that that's where someone like you, who has had to deal with reforms in Birmingham, can make that promise that this is going to happen if you are the governor.
Oh, that's the game. The first thing we need to do is change the fundamentals of the financing. If we attach the money to the student with a voucher program,
yeah,
a school choice, and encourage and support homeschooling, private schooling, religious schooling, and have some accountability in the government schools, we can move our education program forward in school. And the Alabama legislature is still beholden, as a Republican majority, same people are calling the shots. The school system is about the system. It's not about the students.
And exactly.
That's a crying shame and something we must address in this state.
Okay. Well, Jimmy, let me ask you this. Let's kind of shift focus to, questions about the I-10 bridge project. I would argue that the Tea Party and others have really argued against a toll, particularly the $6 toll. But from what we understand, it looks as though they'll probably have a $2.50 toll, which we can swallow. Okay, we've agreed that we're not going to fight that. But the real question is the degree to which the state has going to, has actually committed itself to making this project happen. And I would ask you to kind of lay out what your vision is for this, particularly if we are in financial difficulties because this economy is not going to be as strong as it is right now. You're already starting to see layoffs in some of the tech things. Zuckerberg is laying off people along with Elon Musk. So the handwriting is on the wall that the economy is more than likely already in a recession. But my point is, given what we know about financing and what we expect in the future here, what are your thoughts about how you are going to be able to get that bridge done, even if there are real issues with trying to do both the bridge and the Bayway at the same time?
I mean, if you read the news, I think today the money that came in from the new gasoline tax was $25 million more than what they were anticipating. So that the state right now is rolling in money, both the general fund side and on the special education trust fund side. Gasoline taxes are at record levels, and so the money's there. I mean, the thing that's really curious to me is why we would think that supporting the interstate system in Mobile would be any different than the rest of the state. We certainly have been, Mobile should have the same priorities as anybody else. I-10 is an interstate highway and should be fully supported by both the state and the federal government. And as you say, we've got to be a little bit proactive about it, because the lifetime of a bridge is limited, and it takes years to do that, and so we need to be looking ahead to that, to that end.
Well, I mean, the concerns we have is that, you know, and this is Senator Albert made this point. If you could, you know, look carefully at a default position, because as Albert pointed out, they're trying to get a $1 billion bond. Okay, the prison bond was for $800 million. Next thing you know, it only came in at $520 million. So the working assumption is that the bridge bond for $1 billion may be less than what they wanted. And if that's the case, then it seems to me that you're looking at a very difficult approach to doing both of these projects at once. And that, and ALDOT has been pretty, I mean, look, Director Cooper, it's my way or the highway. It's always been his approach to this. And so our argument, and I just made this argument at the MPO just a couple of weeks ago, it, what is the default position going to be if you don't have the funding? It's kind of fundamental, you know? And so my argument to you would be, start working now to have that default position so that we actually get the bridge we need. And there's an expressway approach to this, which both Senator Albritton and Kevin Spriggs had produced. Kevin and I went to every municipality down here, Jimmy, and we sold the expressway, okay? And they understood that if the bridge is not going to be built the way ALDOT wanted it, then here's an expressway that came in for $1 billion. Now, that's a couple of years ago. I get that. But my point is, you know, if you're the governor and ALDOT guy works for you, then it seems to me that that's the kind of, you know, approach that's going to have to be taken, because we really do need this bridge. And that's that. I guess I'm asking you, you know, to think carefully about selling that proposition.
As I mentioned before, I know all the details about what's going on there. I would simply say that, you know, it's just common sense that the I-10 bridge going through Mobile area has to be ready in time when it's needed, and the state would have to do whatever it needs to do to get that done, and to look at all options. And I think the ones that you suggest make sense.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll be your advisor. Okay. if you're the governor, I'll come up and be your bridge advisor. How's that,
Kevin? That would be good.
Yeah, we'll take charge of it. Well, listen, Jimmy, I'm going to have John Sophocles on in just a few minutes. So if you could please just summarize, you know, your final pitch to everyone on the eve of the election tomorrow.
Well, if people want to hold politicians in Montgomery accountable, then the best way they can do that is to vote for libertarians, make sure that libertarians are still on the ballot. The Democrats and Republicans have colluded. They're still in this election to try to keep us below that, so that they won't have to face us in 2 years and in 4 years. And people should not allow that to happen. Vote libertarian all the way down the ballot, particularly the ones where there are only two people running. And those primarily are Republican and Libertarian. In other cases, they are Democrat and Libertarian. And one other thing, Charlie Wycroft for sheriff, clean up Mobile County. Charlie's by far your best option.
Yeah, I
Thank
agree
you, Lou.
With that.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Blake. I appreciate you. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, so, folks, that Dr. Jimmy Blake is an alternative to the go-along, get-along with the Business Council of Alabama, that is exactly what KIV is representing. And so our argument is, let's take a look at the options available. And I think it's important to look at someone like Dr. Blake, who has entrepreneurial experience, he has government experience, and he's a medical doctor. And I think that it's important for us to have that option. So, and speaking of options, we have another candidate on the line, Dr. John Sophocles. John, good morning.
Good morning, Lou. Can you hear me well?
You're coming in loud and clear. Very good. Okay. So listen.
Anyway, I use this phone just for you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. So listen, I've had Pete Rehm on and then Jimmy Blake. And what I've done with both of them is to give them an opportunity to kind of give us a rundown on how your campaign is going and then start talking about some of the issues that are important to you and to the constituents that you've been talking to. So, John, why don't you just let people know who you are and how your campaign is going?
Very well. I'm John Sophocles, Libertarian Party candidate for United States Senate. The campaign is going really well. I guess, Lou, my biggest frustration is it's hard to take candidates seriously that won't debate. I mean, where's Will Ainsworth? Where's Jay Ivey? Obviously, where's Britt? I mean, I'd love to see debates with the PSC candidates. Obviously, the number one issue that I'm hearing from is inflation. And as you've heard me speak, I mean, when Nixon closed the gold window in 72, all bets were off with respect to having any discipline over our monetary policy. Another big issue has been just the veterans that are absolutely flabbergasted, upset with not only our two current senators, but the notion that this is one of the few things that the federal government is actually authorized to do, and they're dropping the ball. There's obviously the tax code, and some of the issues there are a big deal with 755 pages of the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, where we're going to have 87,000 more IRS agents. How about if we do away with a complex tax code and follow the Constitution and have a little bit of uniformity? So, you know, I could talk about a whole bunch of other things as well, you know, national security, immigration, tariff policy, but those are probably the top three, Lou.
Okay. Well, let's assume you're up there. I understand that the Republicans are going to be, you know, putting forth as their first order of business, trying to, well, actually, it's probably going to be the second. They want to do investigations on all the things that have gone on. Okay, fine. But in practical terms, my understanding is that they want to open up the energy sector. So in terms of where you are as a libertarian, I cannot imagine that you wouldn't support moving in that direction to check what's going on in terms of what the woke far-left radicals want to do in terms of shutting down fossil fuels.
Absolutely. And libertarians champion market forces, and it's amazing to see that they won't allow something that, you know, is safe and usable like coal, to have a whole bunch of folks say they want to subsidize nuclear and solar and all these other sort of things, of course, which are not only harmful to the environment, but they're designed to transfer wealth to specific crony contractors. I've always said that, you know, if you can get a private entity to bond and insure a nuclear plant, cheerio. Do you really think folks would be wasting all this money on electric vehicles and all the solar activity? And of course, there are folks like me who, okay, I understand the world. I'll invest in the battery manufacturers and do really well, but that doesn't make me a great entrepreneur. It makes me just understanding the distortions that are going on in the economy.
Well, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with this wealth transfer from the fossil fuel industry to the solar. And again, you know, Solyndra is the classic example of exactly what happened under Obama. And to think it's not going to happen again is ridiculous. But I will say this. I mean, isn't it possible to try to do all of the above as we move forward towards, you know, a, quote, greener approach? You know, I mean.
Amen, Lou. Not only is it possible, but imagine how much better we would shepherd things along if it was driven by market forces, not folks that are spending a bunch of money to corrupt presidents and senators and legislators to get their stuff adopted. And I just don't see what's being done as particularly wise, much less economically efficient.
Right. Okay, let's ask a question about education, okay? Obama came in and basically said he wants to fundamentally change America. Well, one of the first things that he did was to institute this Common Core. Now, we've been fighting Common Core in the state, at the state level, since 2010, and you and I have been hand-in-hand trying to get this thing out of Alabama, and we have not been very successful. So the question really becomes, you know, assuming that, you know, you're there, what sort of approach would you take to try to move the needle in the direction of a fundamental reform to get rid of Common Core?
Well, and first, a shout out to you and Lou and Ann Eubank and Colonel Parsons and John Rice, where, you know, that's right. I mean, a dozen years ago, we were fighting this. Mine is very simple in that it's time to abolish the Federal Department of Education. The federal government has no authorization to be there. And you've heard me speak on this a lot, Lou. I hope I'm not being redundant to your listeners, but the way economists look at the world is you have a leaky bucket. The bucket leaks when we send the dollar up to D.C. with all the administrative waste, et cetera, et cetera. And then the bucket leaks again, bringing that dollar back down to Alabama. And what happens is, with all the mandates and, you know, the crony textbooks and things that you have to do and teach, some estimates say we spend $1.16 for every dollar they send back with the mandates associated with it. Well, that's just insane. This over-centralized, sort of Sovietized education program is going to fail. Every time it's been tried, it fails. We need to get folks to be aware of just how great those losses are.
Well, you know, I certainly can't argue with an over-centralized approach. I mean, we have it at the state level for sure, and at the national level, people have talked about getting rid of the Department of Education, and I think that Newt Gingrich probably had it best in 2016 when he was running for president, and it becomes difficult in terms of trying to maneuver through the bureaucratic regulations and the tenure and all the rest of that stuff. But as he basically said, you just eliminate it. You just don't have it. And that's one of the issues that I think is critical to reestablishing some sort of sanity in dealing with, you know, education. And we've seen all of these states like Virginia and others, people are just standing up saying no to what they're doing with, you know, critical race theory, 1619, all of which are part and parcel of Common Core. So I guess, John, what I'm asking for here is a real commitment, you know, to go after this and not give up until it really happens, that we get rid of Common Core and at the same time get rid of the Department of Education.
Well, and Lou, I know sometimes my bride says no matter how dark it gets, I keep pulling down the shade, but believe it or not, there are hopeful moments here. When I was running for Congress in the mid-90s and I was saying Roe v. Wade was unconstitutional, I had people throwing things at me and hating my face, but lo and behold, after 49 years of extremism, we've gotten that taken care of.
Right.
And yes, the states need to deal with it. The same thing is absolutely true with education. What makes, you know, somebody like Dr. Blake in the governor's seat and someone like me up in Washington is it'd be a good 1-2 punch. I want to get rid of the federal beast, and we need just as many people here at the state level to shepherd us back in the right direction. I mean, furthermore, we need to give folks like Stephanie Bell a little bit more help at times, because I think she feels exasperated and the school board, you know, problems. So I wish we had more that were willing to engage. Once again, like you and Ann, let's get John Rice to fire up the Stop Common Core bus. And,
right,
you know, Colonel Parsons, I think that when they see a little bit of success in D.C. with somebody like me up there, you know, enough with Katie Britt and the big government folks, that you'll start to see others get that ray of hope and things will fall into line.
Okay. All right. We've got a few more minutes. Just quickly, talk to us a little bit about, you know, funding the I-10 bridge project, which, you know, I've called the present financial plan nothing but a house of cards. They're trying to do the bridge as well as a new bayway concurrently, and I just don't think that the money is there to do it. So assuming that the priority, in my view, is getting the bridge, then what are your thoughts about assisting Alabama getting some funding, particularly difficult in a situation where you've got the Democrats in charge, but it could be that Republicans, along with their libertarian friends, could be in charge, and we could generate some support for, I would argue, a pretty vital piece of infrastructure down here.
The great thing about the I-10 bridge is that it's just one of the many illustrations, but one of the bigger ones, of corruption at ALDOT. And what would be nice as a U.S. senator is to not get stonewalled and have to worry about FOIAs and all the other ridiculous blocks for information requests.
Yeah,
I would love to be able to get firsthand documents and sort through it. And once again, I'm going to say that, you know, I'm more up to speed with the stuff that I've been fighting here in East Alabama. But I was under the impression that there were already going to be two additional lanes that weren't going to be, you know, increased cost. And then, lo and behold, all these BCA crony contractors want to get their mitts into doing a bunch of stuff that has no business actually getting, you know, even in the process. And what you talk about and try and educate your listeners on is this important duration thing, right? All these have a window of time where sooner or later they decay enough that have to be addressed. Some of the existing infrastructure down there, I think, is getting close to a dozen to 17 years.
Yes.
Having to be addressed either way, whether you want to make additions to it or just keep the existing flow and capacity that you have. I don't expect that somebody like Katie Britt is going to actually press the issue and get the sort of documents to expose the wrongdoings going on down there, Lou. Call me funny.
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head with Katie Britt not doing anything to cross all of her supporters who want the crony approach to this. So, John, I'm about to run out of time here, so can you just wrap it up in about a minute and give us a final pitch for why we should vote for John Sophocles for U.S. Senate?
Absolutely. Thank you again, Lou, for having us on and for the Common Sense campaign endorsement. I think what in my final day here, I've had so many people say, thank you for the courage to run. Now I'm asking folks for the courage to vote. Like, vote for me instead of continuing to waste your vote on big government Democrats and Republicans. Katie Britt is the classic example from her mentor, Shelby,
right,
the big government Democrat who just changed the red jersey, and nothing really changed except for the ease of being reinstalled. You know, Katie Britt makes, what, $574,000 a year from the Business Council of Alabama. You don't think that she's going to continue to be tied to those crony contractors?
Exactly.
Scare them. Even if you don't like me, vote for me so that there'll be other better candidates and bring competition here to Alabama.
Well,
I'm
John,
on time, Lou.
Thank you, Guy. I appreciate it, and best of luck tomorrow. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, my friend.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, so, Lori, we've had a full morning.
A wealth of information.
2 minutes or so. Lori's telling me 1 minute. Okay, well, we won't haggle about that. Okay, so just keep in mind, obviously, we need to go to vote tomorrow. Okay, now think about this. If you don't know who to vote for, if you're cloudy on the amendments, excuse me, go to the commonsensecampaign.org, and you'll find our recommendations on who the candidates are to vote for and what the amendments are to vote yes or no on, okay? So do that. Now, Veterans Day is coming up on Friday. Please take a minute to thank your veterans, of those you know and appreciate, lots of family members who are veterans. But the fact of the matter is, without the veterans, we wouldn't be here doing what we're doing, because our veterans saved us in World War II, defeated the communists. We have stopped ISIS and the crazy jihadists only because we have brave people who want to do the right thing and who are capable of doing it. We have got to make sure that we honor our veterans, take care of those, and I don't disagree at all with what John Sophocles said. The government has not been doing the best job with that. So, on that note, Lori, you have a great week. Those of you out in Radio Land, have a wonderful week. Go to vote tomorrow, and I'll see you at the Red Wave next Monday. Take
Thank
care.
You. Thank Bye. You, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne, and on 181 in Malbus with the state-of-the-art car wash. The second half hour of this program is paid for by an anonymous donor. This program does not represent the views and management of this station. If you missed part of the show, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com. Now resuming regular programming.